I'm Willie D. Nelson from All Things Good and Nerdy, a pop culture podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other tantalizingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again, we're just forgetting the whole looking at a video game based on a comic thing and talking to a creator about their cool stuff. This time, I've got Skylar, one of the writers working on Magical Girl Defense Force over on Kickstarter. Skylar, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I mean, I'm really glad we were able to make this one work out because I just randomly ran across this scrolling through Twitter and said, this is going to end sooner than I usually like to have warning on these Kickstarter episodes. So I should see if they want to come on the show. And you did.
Well, I appreciate it. I do love doing these, doing Kickstarters. It really helps out with getting the word out there. And Lord knows I need it since this is probably my biggest project funding-wise. To date.
Well, I think Magical Girl Defense Force is kind of a little bit like exactly what it says on the tin, but why don't you give us a little bit of an elevator pitch for this project?
Yeah, so I think most people know what a magical girl is, a young teenager who gets these incredible powers and pretty dresses and has to fight some kind of otherworldly monster while either getting to school on time or finding love. Well, my idea is about the same, but a bit different. It has a bit of a superhero twist to it in the sense of, what if all those different various superhero magical girls like Sailor Moon, the Tokyo Mew Mew girls, the Symphogear girls, they happen to exist in the same universe like a DC or Marvel comic book? Like, how would the world be with just this little army of magical girls and just an endless supply of interdimensional monsters to fight? And that's basically what my story is about. It's about a world where magical girls have become this widely known, highly popular, but also highly regulated phenomenon in modern culture. It just really looks at how different the experience of a magical girl would be if you had to basically join what is functionally a military group to train them, house them, and more importantly, treat them like some kind of public service superhero compared to how they used to be running around in the shadows fighting monsters in alleyways. And it just focuses deeply on both the lore of how different the world would be with that, but also the adventures of one particular magical girl called Spooky Guardian Janice as she navigates the inner workings and bureaucracy of this new system and trying to make friends, finding love, going to a school full of magical girls, and also trying to more or less sort out her own complicated past.
So basically my only experience with magical girls is Sailor Moon and, if you want to count, Ranma One Half. So what was it that got you into this genre?
Well, you just named it right there. Like, for a lot of us 90s kids, it was Sailor Moon on Toonami. Like, when I was growing up, I was, you know, Batman, Superman, Goku, all these guys. And then one day on Toonami, there was this very sparkly show with these girls. I was like, what the hell is this? But at the same time, my TV time was very limited, so Toonami was sort of a sacred time. You know, back during the Saturday morning cartoon age, when we had those, my time was limited, so I decided, whatever, let's just watch it. And after that, I just got a whole new experience compared to watching Batman or Superman or Dragon Ball Z. It just helped me find a liking for more empathetic and goofier and just more heartfelt characters. Like, it gave me a new appreciation for characters who show their emotions and just empathy. Not that Superman didn't teach me empathy, but you know what I mean. It's a different experience, especially for a 90s kid.
Yeah, both in what you're watching, and because it's a whole different kind of empathy coming there. Like, Superman comes in and it's, yes, I want to save everybody, but you know, watching Sailor Moon, it's like, it's just a whole different thing. Plus the whole aspect of watching it because it's on, because that's all you have. I mean, that's something kids today aren't going to have to deal with. And I kind of feel sorry for them about that.
Yeah, it was a different beast back then with cable TV. after that, beyond Sailor Moon, just I grew up with so many others, like Tokyo Mew Mew on Fox Kids, shows like Witch on Disney, Winx Club also on Fox Kids. And then as I got older and able to buy my own stuff, just FYI, I was from small town, so if you wanted to get anything like this, your parents had to take you to an actual store outside of town. So soon as a lot of my tastes ended up varying more as I was able to drive to someplace with media. And that's kind of when I started to find even more stories like manga and the like, and end up finding even more stories. And then just the wonders of the internet helped fill in the gaps of every other show I missed.
But one of the things that really caught my attention with this was you guys talking about how you're mixing manga and Western comic styles. And honestly, to me, I don't think of them as a giant stylistically different thing. So what exactly are you trying to squeeze together when you say that?
Well, when I use that, it's more of a... There's two different sides to that. Like, honestly, manga and comics, they're the same thing at the end of the day. It's like, I see so many people having a big spat on social media about it, but they're the same thing. I think the more correct term, they're different mediums, basically. But in the same... They're all both in the same wheelhouse. Like, my big pitch for it is, it has a lot of the best aspects of a manga. It's, you know, pocket-sized, small, compact, but also has some aspects of Western comics medium. You know, it's left to right, full color, and it just feels like a good blend of the two. Since, you know, manga, you gotta accept there's no color. Like, that's probably been the stark difference between the two, is, you know, one prioritizes black and white art, the other color is basically a demand in Western comics, unless you want to go with a noir story. As for thematic reasons, like, this very much is Sailor Moon meets Justice League Unlimited on some level, because you just have this giant, massive cast of magical girls who are all these different homages to different shows, different characters, different genres of magical girls. Like, honestly, if you look deep, there's like so many different layers to magical girls that I could take from for this series. You know, there's Western magical girls to look off of, idol singers, ones that don't even really fight, they're more of just like, go do a good deed or something. And it's just, there's so many aspects and layers to it you could go to. and just there's also this sort of superhero spin to it, because I gotta be careful with this, because some people actually did get miffed that I compared magical girls to superheroes when I talked about the idea, and they're not the same thing. But my story is basically, what if they were treated like that? Because they are very much treated like some big, flashy superhero coming to save the day. Because compared to most magical girl stories, they almost always are fighting their monsters in secret. Nobody knows what they're doing. They're either in some other dimension or fighting in some alleyway. They just almost never know what they're doing. Like, the biggest lore aspect of this is, how would the world react to find out that a huge chunk of teenage girls were rushing off into alleyways and risking their lives to fight some horrific monsters from other dimensions? And like, in this story, though it doesn't really come up in Volume 1, there's plenty who have very obvious concerns about their children going up against these things, but there's just the stark reality that these things are immune to almost everything except magic. And this becomes this moral dilemma of sending minors to basically be these pseudo-military-like operatives against what are basically indestructible monsters that just want to kill everybody.
I mean, you're just making me want to get this more and more.
I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, like you said, you've got the giant cast of Justice League. Sounds like you've got the parental concern, sometimes giantly misplaced parental concern, of the recent Marvel Outlaw event, which I loved. And just the giant emotional, like, real person connection that I always like finding in my characters. So, yeah, I think the only question now is going to be what level of support I give this one, and then try my best to make sure it actually gets funded.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. yeah, you put a good, you said a really good thing there about how character-driven this is. Like, even if it has a very sizable cast, it does focus eventually on a very specific group of people, with the two shown this volume being Janice and Cutie Axolotl, the girl in the pink outfit in the preview pages. They very much form the emotional core of the story, as it focuses on their strifes and also just their budding friendship and possibly something more.
So what makes you the person to tell this kind of story?
I've actually debated that for a long time, because, you know, well, honestly, outside of the whole stigma people have of, if you're not Japanese, you can't make manga or manga-like stuff. Like, that was a big, big thing in fandom for a while, a few years back, was just a sort of elitism. Like, you know, if there's this big kind of just people turning their nose to manga-styled Western products, because, like, you know, they were just posers, basically, instead of just seeing them as fans. I was actually not working on this for a while, just because both of that and this concern that I wasn't the person to tell the story, because, you know, I was a guy, and there were so many. But then I read this one comic a long time ago called Zodiac Star Force. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it was this Dark Horse comic from several years back. It was a Western magical girl story. It was by, as if my cat would get out of the way so I could make sure I don't butcher his name, Kevin Panetta, and art by Paulina, okay, I'm going to butcher this one, Ganachiu. It was this super wonderful story that was basically a love letter to Sailor Moon, and it was just everything I wanted to do, and it just helped me get over these misconceptions I had. Like, okay, I'm not Japanese, I can't make a manga story. Yeah, no, yes, I can. And The other thing was, like, you know, I'm a guy. I can't make a magical girl story. And no, yes, you can, because that was the whole point with magical girls, was just not feeling like you feel insecure about doing something because, you know, you're a guy, you're a girl. Like, a lot of people don't look close enough, but a lot of old school magical girl series really said F you to gender norms. And it just helped me, like, finally just put this idea to paper and craft it over the years. And it's honestly one of my favorite stories of all time. Like, it's not going to win an Eisner, but it has a very special place in my heart. I do feel bad about how things went down, because the franchise kind of ended just because of some stupid legal thing. And I really do hope they come back to it someday.
And how did you get hooked up with everybody else who's working on this story with you?
That one's kind of basic. Like, I put out an ad for an artist because I was like, okay. It was kind of hard at the time because I couldn't really find a good manga-style artist at the time. And even today, it's still a struggle, because when you go onto a artist board, a lot of times, almost all of them are Western comic-style artists. And it's just this general thing of the manga style at the time just wasn't very favored by industries at the time. So everyone just focused their craft on Western comics. And anyone who had actual mid-tier manga style talent usually has worked on their own things. So when I found Alaze, she was basically a godsend, because she was just this one in a million manga style artist who was actually freelance, and she's just been a joy to work with. And as for the others, just networking through social media, basically. I found Laura, I found Kat, and I found Alive through a friend, and that's basically it. Like, that's honestly one of the biggest not so secret tips about indie comics is about 75% of it is networking your butt off on social media and finding other indies trying to help you, because that's the only way that you're going to get your stuff out there. You're going to find people to collaborate with. You just need to network like it's the end of the world, basically.
Well, yeah, let's just go blow my secret there of one of the reasons why I'm doing these kinds of episodes. How long have you been working on this story? Because it seems like it's something that's been sitting there for a while, and you're trying to make it just right.
Yeah. And ignoring all the times it was just bouncing through my head as a loose idea, I want to say it started about late 2019 into the early 2020. Like, I was working on it for a good year, and at the time, I thought about taking it as a webtoon, basically. And that's how it actually started with me and Lays, was it started out in a webtoon format, but I got concerned that I just couldn't afford to make enough of a buffer for a weekly webtoon, and to the point where it would actually make a profit. And, you know, well, when you're trying to do that, you do have to make a profit just so you can keep making more pages, basically. And so I thought, okay, let's just restructure this. Maybe take, at the time, while I was trying to figure that out, I was actually starting to dip my toe into crowdfunding with my regular comic stuff, like Sooner Force, and I was like, okay, this is actually working for me. Maybe I can actually take this to Kickstarter. But that took a considerable amount of time reworking all those panels into actual pages. I tried to rework them into a Western comic book style, and they're just, because of the restrictions on webtoon formats, that just did not look right. So I thought, okay, what if I took it to something smaller, like a manga page? And even though some pages I did have to pay Alaze to touch up a bit to fix just the limitations from the webtoon style, it ended up looking very neat and helped form basically what the medium of this would look like. And after that, it's just been crafting it, and just getting it here to Kickstarter. Like, I had a very serious discussion about if we should just crowdfund with the finished three chapters instead of trying to get funding for the remaining two, like just chop them out and save them for another volume. But it was just ultimately agreed that it would end on a very lame place for a first volume. So we're kind of rolling the dice on this one, since up until now we've been playing it safe with single issue to single issue Kickstarters. So this is going to be our first big gamble on a full graphic novel, but we're very confident that we can reach it. Like, honestly, the success of my last one, The Owl, it almost made 6K on a, like, 23K budget. And so I have very high confidence that we can actually pull this off.
That length thing and just having to be a graphic novel instead of issues is, honestly, it's one of the reasons that I'm so intrigued by it. Because I know that I get to go in, get this whole story, and I mean, even if you don't come back with more, I've got this whole story. So it's not like I've got the first three chapters of a five-chapter thing.
Yeah, like, really, I've got whole story arcs, like, volumes of story arcs mapped out. Like, you know, honestly, if I had the money, just, you know, isn't that this, like, the true villain of all indie comics is funding, that basically, I basically have ideas for a whole story arc and really hoping to make this into a franchise, basically, because I just love the story, and I just couldn't really see doing it as a single issue one like the others, because it just takes so long, it would take so long to get to some of the good parts of the comic, and like I said, with the format issue, it would look super weird to get a single issue floppy of a 5x7 comic. So I'm very excited, because I didn't think I would be trying to do a graphic novel this soon in my career. So I'm really hopeful that we can get this book fully funded by November, and also just excited to get it made and ready to go by early 2022.
One of the things that made me want to follow Blue Turtle Comics, which is the imprint you're printing this under on Kickstarter, for anybody who doesn't know. But one of the things that made me want to jump up and follow y'all was the Native American, specifically the Osage and just Oklahoma themed stuff, because just representation issues, I think, are something that will really need to be addressed. And I think that's definitely a group of things that I just haven't run across anywhere else.
Yeah, it's like, while Magical Defense Force is my first property under this that doesn't specifically focus on Native American or specifically Osage characters or culture like the Owl or Sooner Force did, it is, representation is still a very important aspect underneath it, because that's one thing someone said that they really liked about the pitch was there was just all these different diverse magical girls. Like, my main character is bisexual. Maria, aka Cutie Axolotl, is a Mexican American, and just many other characters are from very different backgrounds, different cultures, it's a very diverse book when it comes to the characters. A lot of people just thought that was just amazing. Like, I just can't tell you how it felt when I was making the promo trailer for Magical World Defense Force, and I had this idea to have some of the main characters be voiced through these little animatics, and the voice actress for Cutie Axolotl, Marie Chavez, very, very lovely lady, she was just gushing and super excited at the concept of a Latina magical girl, and she was super excited to voice her. And that feeling is just what I want to give other people in Magical Girl Defense Force. It's like all the people who are excited about John Kent being bisexual, or just many other characters like Miss Marvel or Miles Morales. Just this excitement to see them represented in a comic or a show, and just that amazing feeling when you have that feeling of, yeah, we're being represented. And it's just in a very respectful and natural manner. And I'm just hoping that Magical Girl Defense Force has that same feeling for other people who read it.
Yeah, I think having this one in color rather than the black and white that a manga usually is really lets you show to Western audiences that are used to seeing the color more of like, hey, this isn't a bunch of white girls running around.
Yeah, before I made the choice to make it colored, it was going to be a black and white comic with screen tones. I mean, screen tones definitely helped with that issue, but it's just not the same as with color. And, I mean, okay, if we're being real here, just my main reason for it being full color was just the realization my team gave me of, you know, Western readers are going to expect full color, and so I just had to roll with that. And as I got a new colorist to cover it, it just ended up helping with that aspect greatly. Just you can just see the different skin tones of characters, and just you don't have to guess with like you have to with screen tones. Like, it's kind of a funny game with manga. Like, have you ever read a manga, see someone like, I know what their color scheme's gonna look like, and then the anime comes out and it's like, well, I was dead wrong.
I mean, I'm making a pretty, I feel like a very safe assumption reading High School Family that one of the side characters that pops in is black. But there's some other context clues there.
I need to get back on that book. It was one of my favorites way back at the time. But yeah, it's like when I first saw, like when I was reading Naruto back in the day, or okay, maybe a more specific idea is when I was reading My Hero Academia, I legit thought that one main girl, Uraraka, was blonde. Then the anime came out and she was brunette. I was like, well, I was completely off. Like, it's just, color really helps, you know? And I just think that's really going to help people more sold on the story that, yeah, it's a manga-inspired story, but still has some of the trappings of a Western comic. Full color, left to right.
And how'd y'all decide what kind of Kickstarter rewards to have for this?
Well, this wasn't my first rodeo with Kickstarter rewards, but in general, I try to add a lot of new things compared to my previous ones. Like, I thought mugs. Mugs could be neat, and they were relatively cost-effective to get made, and probably more importantly, and the reason why I didn't try acrylic standees for this one, even though I really wanted to, was I could just get one preview one made. Like, some people were asking me why I didn't do acrylic standees for this one, because those tend to be very popular. And here's a little secret for why you shouldn't do those unless you have a guaranteed large audience, like other Kickstarters. Most places where you get them bought at, they're going to expect a minimum order of like 100. And when I tried that for one of my Sooner Force Kickstarters, it wasn't that popular, or what I think was, I just didn't have the following at a time to justify it. So I am just sitting on a whole box of Storm Dancer acrylic standees that I'm trying to sell off, and I'll honestly probably use them in Sooner Force number 2's Kickstarter for like a early bird special or something. So I want to do them because they are a very cool item, but there's a little secret for you out there. Know what your audience is and what you can reasonably give them. And it's also one of the reasons I went with trading cards this time at my Kickstarter consultant Kat's suggestion, because they're very cheap to make, and thanks to my graphic design background, I didn't really need to pay anyone to make them for me. I just needed to take the concept art from way back, tweak it a bit, and there you go. Trading cards. Like, you gotta think about what you can make and what is going to not cost you as much, because especially for this project, you gotta make sure all your funding is going to your book and making it a reasonable goal. So, you know, think about what'd be fun, what would fit your project, and just what's financially realistic. That's probably some solid Kickstarter advice I would give.
I think the biggest problem I'm gonna have is I think I've kind of settled on getting the level with your other comics as well. But then you're gonna make me pick a cover. And I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do that.
Oh dear. Well, I'm glad that you enjoy all the covers. They were very, very nice. They were all very nice covers, and that was a hard decision for me because, again, it falls into this of you have to be reasonable with it, because it was just, unlike all the other ones, these aren't just little single floppies, these are full books. So I had to be very tactical about what tiers offer what, and especially who offer all those books, because, well, besides the printing costs, you also have to factor in shipping weight when you're getting ready to ship these, because, oh boy, if I could do a whole episode on the horrors of shipping and fulfilling Kickstarter rewards, and just shipping weight is like the ultimate supervillain. Honestly, just with the rewards, this wasn't my first rodeo, but I did a lot of things different thanks to consulting Kat, and it's just exciting. Like, there's some things I wish I could have done differently if funding and other issues weren't a factor. Like I said, I really wish I could have offered acrylic standees. I wish I could offer acrylic standees for all my projects, but it's just another case of you gotta be realistic about what you can offer, since I'm not just coming here for printing like the others. I gotta help fund an entire book now.
And you're the first campaign that I've seen that has a Kickstarter consultant named, like, as part of the staff for working on the book. So, I mean, is having a Kickstarter consultant a normal thing when you go put things on Kickstarter?
I'm not sure if I could answer that, because this is my first time using one. Like, I usually just consulted how-tos, webinars, and stuff at the time, but I looked at her services and offering, and like I said, after the fiasco with the acrylic standees with my Xenoforce campaign, I was like, okay, I need some hands-on help with this. So I decided to give it a try, and, you know, paid her for her services, and she was actually very nice, and more importantly, she was a very blunt realist that helped hammer out a bunch of bad habits that I was, like, you know, very important, don't offer something that you financially aren't sure is going to sell, like the standees, because I thought those were going to be the big thing that helped boost my comics, and then they just became a money pit. And other things, she helped me with the wording of my Kickstarter. She helped with gutting out excess, like she really thought I was putting out too many page previews, and that I needed to consolidate it more, chop them up more. There's just a lot of things at the time, because up until I got Cat, I was doing almost everything about the projects outside of the art. You know, that's print production, networking, getting all this together, and you can get overwhelmed very easily and overlook things. And I think Cat very much helped me get centered on a project. She helped me figure out what I needed to focus on, what I needed to cut, and just what was working, what wasn't working. And even though she's technically not part of the book's team, she was a huge help, and it just did not feel right to not recognize her on the Kickstarter, especially since she had a lot of different projects going that I wanted to shout out for her. So I thought it felt only right to credit her in the team. Like, I mean, honestly, as far as the actual book, she'll probably be under the special thanks section, but it just felt right to actually have her credit, to get the credit she deserved for the time she put in to help get my hot mess of an early Kickstarter page into what it is now.
And how nice has it been for y'all getting to put that Kickstarter project we love stamp right there on the top of your page?
Getting that on the second day was a very awesome feeling. Like, I think it took several weeks for all my other projects to get that sticker, so it was very, very awesome to hit that little milestone. We still got a bit of a long ways to go since we're like still at the halfway point with our funding, but having that sticker right there really helps our confidence and really helps in a lot of other ways. So it's very, very nice to be able to have that badge of honor this early in the project.
And what advice would you have for somebody looking to start working on their own comics?
Well, there's a lot of advice. That could be a whole story in its own, but if I want to give you very practical advice, I would say write your story, figure out what roles you can't do, and put out ads to find the person to fill in those holes. The biggest mistake you can ever make is thinking you can do it all. Like, yes, you should try to do it all, because the fees for all these different people add up soon enough. But you need to figure out what you can do to save money, or what you need to do to hire out to make sure your project is the best that it looks. And that's probably just the best advice I can have. Balance what you can do to save money, but also figure out what positions you need to throw money at to have the best chance of making your book look the best it can be. Just find that balance.
And finally, a few more lighthearted things to close things out. First off, the question I ask everybody: who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh man, that is a tough one, because I love the Muppets. Like, I mean, I could go with the easy answer and say Kermit or Miss Piggy, but, you know, honestly, I've always been a Sam the Eagle kind of guy. Like, he doesn't get the respect he deserves. Like, just his dry humor always makes me laugh my butt off whenever he's on screen, which isn't as much as the others. So, honestly, I think I'm a very much Sam the Eagle guy.
No, when he's there, though, it's gold. I love it.
Yeah, okay, granted, he's one of those characters, I think he would overstay his welcome if you focused on him, but when his jokes land, he just, you know, hits like a semi-truck compared to the others' humor.
And finally, what is the most ridiculous thing you found yourself doing while procrastinating?
Okay, that would be a long list, honestly. Like, I think one time, actually, when I was trying to focus on writing Magical Girl Defense Force's script, I was just procrastinating and honestly started doodling and typing out this random idea for a completely different project, and before I realized it, had a whole character Bible ready for that dumb idea in my head. I was like, what the hell, Skylar? You need to work on this other project first. Like, sometimes you just get so many ideas in your head and then you just get lost in them sometimes.
So what are the chances we see that idea coming sometime in the future?
Not the immediate future, but it's definitely one that I think's got legs. So maybe sometime in 2022. It depends on if I win the lottery and don't have to tactically pick and choose what books I can fund.
That's a good point. Speaking of that, I should have asked you this earlier. Having a story about halfway done, at least as far as producing the comic goes, what kind of timeline do you think you're looking at for getting the physical copy into my hands? You know, assuming that shipping does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, ignoring what possible hellscape the shipping and supply world looks like in 2022, we're looking at about 6 to 7 month production time from when the campaign ends production. Allais gave me a rough estimate of 2 months per chapter for these last two chapters, and then in between that I'll be getting the others colored and lettered. So I've been trying to think of a way to make sure people aren't waiting a little half a year for it, and I had this idea, since I've already got half the book quote-unquote done, is that I'm going to be releasing the book, the chapters monthly, sort of like a monthly comic to backers. And okay, this next part is a bit of a work in progress and it'll probably change, but find a digital outlet for them, and then eventually all backers will get the full book digitally and then the physical book, so that way they're not waiting 6 months for this comic to come out. They can just kind of read it monthly like they would like going to Shonen Jump's website, which I think is going to be a very fun idea and help with the 6 month waiting period that some people might be worried about.
So 6 months is kind of a long time, and I know just personally for me, but I'm sure this would apply to other people as well, I'm hoping to not be where I'm living right now in 6 months. So do you have something prepared to like make sure that I'm still at the address that Kickstarter has when they collect my money?
Yeah, well, besides obviously making sure to hit that little checkbox on the survey that says let people change their addresses if they need to, I am currently debating about when to send out the surveys, because some people might even forget what their preferences or choices were by then. But I main thing is I'm going to make sure that they can change their addresses if they need to, and very much so send out constant emails and updates saying, okay, the book is ready, just double check to make sure your address is correct, and then we'll get shipped out. And I think that's okay, that's not going to be a pretty solution, but that seems like the best solution we're going to have. Like, you know, this is one of the reasons why they tell you try to have your book as close to done as possible before going to Kickstarter, but just financial reasons forced us to make this decision to try and get the rest of the book funded through Kickstarter at this time.
I mean, looking at it from the other side of things, though, in 6 months when this finally shows up, it's going to be like my birthday. In the complete wrong end of the time of the year. But all of a sudden, here's going to be this book that past me got for myself. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I would have given you a birthday present ahead of time. Now that's kind of end of the 3D chess you got to be doing when you're an indie comic creator.
Well, Skylar, it has been great talking to you about all this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at @BT_comics. You can also find us on Facebook at Blue Turtle Comics, and also Instagram at Blue Turtles Comics, because somebody already took Blue Turtle Comics when I formed this, so I had to add an S to it. But those are our main ones. We're trying to get a website off the ground, but you can probably find us at those places. I'm a bit more active on Twitter than the others, so that'd probably be sort of my headquarters, so to speak, for now.
And as always, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, including a link to the Kickstarter, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Oh, definitely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me on the show. It was just very awesome to be here to talk about my story, and I do appreciate you doing this for me and my team, because, you know, we're already at the halfway point, and we are kind of hitting what they call the Kickstarter plateau, and we could use every boost we can to help knock it out.
Well, that's definitely why I do these episodes, and not so I can suck all of your skill and knowledge into me, so my own thing will be successful when I finally get around to doing it.
Oh, no. I'll just say that real quick. Never consider that just sucking people's knowledge, because, like I said, 90% of successful indie comics production is networking your butt off and learning from others. Like, we... Indie comics people gotta stick together. We gotta work together because, you know, the industry basically doesn't care about us. Like, that's not like some kind of evil anti-industry thing. It's the realization of they look at you and say, "Who are you again?" Like, basically, we're nobodies, and us nobodies gotta stick together, help shout each other out, make people know what we're working on, help each other with things we may not know, and just really. Just indies gotta look out for each other. It's the only way really anyone gets by in our circle of the internet, and I just hope to be able to pass that along just as much as other people have passed on to me, just super vital knowledge, and I'm happy to help anyone who has questions about that.
It also makes for really interesting comments from the people working at my local shop when they see what I have getting pulled for me.
Oh, definitely.
As always, if you want to hear more from me, head on over to playcomics.com, where you can find links to all the social media stuff, including Twitter, where you can just go to PlayComicsCast, or Facebook, where you can go to whatever the Facebook link is. Or, you know, just hang out on playcomics.com and click links, because I just said it, clicking links is easier than trying to remember how to spell things. If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to playcomics.com/support and support me monetarily, which, you know, does help cover the cost of hosting and paying the other people who write comic reviews, because I'm not asking them to do that for free, even though some of them probably would. I don't care. I'm not that kind of person. Or you can just take the podcast and shove it into someone's ear holes. That's always cool too, because then I get new listeners and hopefully they stick around and, you know, they tell more people, and then it exponentially grows like a chain letter, in theory. Yeah, I just compared this to a chain letter, and it is late, so I'm not taking that out. Thankfully, Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to a bunch of other wonderfully geeky shows who know that chain letters are bad and would never compare their podcast to a chain letter. Unlike some people, who are me. If you like the music that I'm really talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.